Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And on this fifth anniversary of the Iraq War, Barack Obama remains headline news for addressing things that someone else said, but stuffed on page 15 of the Times today is a little piece revealing that John McCain repeatedly got it wrong yesterday about who's on whose side in the Iraq War. According to the article, Mr. McCain said several times in his visit to Jordan in a news conference and in a radio interview that he was concerned that Iran was training al-Qaeda in Iraq. The United States believes that Iran, a Shiite country, has been training and financing Shiite extremists in Iraq, but not al-Qaeda, which is a Sunni group. We're going to play some tape of this here in just a second. Mr. McCain said at a news conference in Amman that he continued to be concerned about Iranians, quote, taking al-Qaeda into Iran, training them, and sending them back. Then he was challenged about that statement at the news conference, and here's what McCain said then.
Well, it's common knowledge and has been reported in the media that that al-Qaeda is going back into Iran and receiving training and are coming back into Iraq from Iran. That's well known. And it's unfortunate. So I believe that we are succeeding in Iraq. The situation is dramatically improved, but I also want to emphasize time and again, al-Qaeda is on the run, but they are not defeated. The Iranians are training extremists, not al-Qaeda.
So what you heard there at the end of that, maybe we should play that. Can we cue up that last 15 seconds again? You heard Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, who was traveling with Mr. McCain, whispering in his ear that, no, Iran is not training al-Qaeda. And then McCain haltingly correct himself before the microphone. Let's listen to that again.
The Iranians are training extremists, not al-Qaeda.
Now, of course, the Democrats are pouncing on this, even if the media isn't much reporting it, because much of the rationale for McCain's campaign is that he's the best equipped to deal with the war in Iraq and the challenge of al-Qaeda in general. So, listeners, and we'll save a few lines for McCain supporters, does this give you any pause about John McCain, because it's such a basic thing, the relationship between Iran and al-Qaeda, and by extension, Iran and Iraq and al-Qaeda? Give us a call on that, and in our few minutes before the end of the show, anything else you want to say on this fifth anniversary of the war, a sober moment by any measure, no matter what your judgment about the war in Iraq. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And while your calls are coming in, we have a few minutes with Robin Wright, who is the diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post. She's the author most recently of Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East, just published by Penguin. She's been reporting on and from the Middle East since 1973, has written extensively in the past on Iran, and has been on the show to talk about that. So, Robin Wright, welcome back to WNYC. Hi there.
Always nice to be with you.
Were you surprised, were you shocked even, to hear Senator McCain make that fundamental error about the relationship between Iran and al-Qaeda?
It was a stunning comment, and I'm not sure whether he was tired or what the reason was. The basic reality is that Iran has been helping the Shiite militias such as Muqtada Sadr, arming them, training them, providing them with roadside explosives, providing them with funding. And to make the link with al-Qaeda is mystifying to me.
Now, the actual relationship, and let's clarify it, because I'm sure a lot of listeners are confused. They know al-Qaeda is our enemy. They know Iran is our enemy. And might not understand the whole kind of Shiite-Sunni aspect of why they are not actually allies.
Well, there's longstanding tension, as everyone knows now, between Shiites and Sunnis, and particularly during the rule of the Taliban in Afghanistan, where al-Qaeda had refuge and camps, there was deep tension, and Iran had greater antagonism with the rulers in Afghanistan even than they did with the United States. Now, there are some al-Qaeda operatives who are reportedly or have reportedly made their way through Iran, as many smugglers and others do, in an attempt to get to Iraq. There have been several who have been arrested by or detained by the Iranian government, including a relative of Osama bin Laden, are still in Tehran. The Iranians have demanded the release of their Iranian opposition members in American hands in exchange for handing over the al-Qaeda operatives. There's longstanding tension. Now, in the spirit of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, there have been accusations that al-Qaeda has received some assistance from Iran, but there's little documentary proof to support that. Iran has primarily aided the Shiite groups. It has aided some Kurdish groups in Iraq as well, and some Sunni movements, but there's no track of them assisting, for example, Zarqawi, who headed al-Qaeda in Iraq.
You said there is some evidence, though, of Iran aiding al-Qaeda under the theory that the enemy of the enemy of my
there's some accusations about that. It's the, largely the Iranians have been engaged with their Shiite brethren. That's the overwhelming majority. They have the Iranians also have, ironically, a little bit of interest in stability in Iraq because they have large Kurdish and Sunni communities and Arab communities in their own country, and any instability in Iraq will spill over. But there's little documentary evidence of Iranian government assistance to al-Qaeda in Iraq.
By the way, listeners, to mark the anniversary of the Iraq War, which began 5 years ago today, we have a special page on our website with a selection of our coverage of the Iraq War, both from this program and the rest of the WNYC archives. You can see that and hear it at WNYC.org. Mike in Newark, a McCain supporter. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, good morning. It's this sort of incidental gaffe that the anti-war movement loves, and it's just a political attack. Does it make any difference whether it's al-Qaeda or the extremists? They're both trying to kill the soldiers, and if they could, they'd try to kill us here.
Well, Robin, does it matter if Senator McCain doesn't actually understand the relationship between Iran and al-Qaeda?
Well, since he's running for president, I would think it would be an important thing to understand Iraq, particularly because that's the one issue in which he staked out the greatest foreign policy position. Yes, and it does make a huge difference. The insurgents the insurgents in Iraq are quite different from al-Qaeda, and it's important to understand that their goals are different, their tactics are different, even if they are often targeting the same people.
Bill in South Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Hello, Bill.
That's South Plainfield.
Sorry.
Okay, yes, I haven't been over there. I am a soldier. I'm in my sixth year of mobilization. I've helped train in thousands of troops that have gone over there. You know, two things seem to stand out for me in terms of this war. And, you know, you can see the problem that even a presidential candidate has keeping scorecards straight. You know, we've done two things that have kept us from having a chance to actually, as they want, to win the war. The one is we haven't picked a side and stayed with it. You know, we have all these, you know, one day, We support the Kurds in the north. The next day, we allow the Turks in. They just have a hard time choosing a side over there and sticking with it and winning with it. The other thing, of course, is that Shinseki was right at the beginning. In order for us to have a real winning presence, we need between 300,000 and 400,000 troops in Iraq. We probably need between 200,000 and 300,000, 100,000 troops in Afghanistan and the Allied support to go with it. So those are my points.
Bill, thank you very much. And Robin, as we look at the state of the Iraq war on this fifth anniversary, how much do you agree with Bill, and what are some of your other thoughts?
Well, I think he's absolutely right on the initial deployment, that we didn't have enough forces. That's what's called the Powell document, and that's why in the 1991 Gulf War we succeeded so quickly and decisively. I think history will look back on the limited deployment as one of the first big mistakes. In terms of picking sides, I think the United States knew so little about what was going on inside Iraq in the early days and in the run-up to the war, that we relied on people who had been exiles, including one man, Ahmad Chalabi, who had not been to Iraq since 1958. He'd left as a teenager. And that's one of the reasons I wrote my book, in fact, to get a sense of what's happening inside the region today. And looking at the broader picture, it's quite sad that on the fifth anniversary, that 60% of Iraqis lack basic access to clean water, that there are 4 million people who, out of 26, 27 million, who don't have enough to eat, that there's 2 to 3 hours, a maximum 7 hours of electricity in Baghdad, that 150,000 Iraqi civilians have died. I mean, there have been, you know, this war has not gone as we wanted it to go, hoped it would go, in any way. If you pick the worst-case scenario back in 2003, I'm not sure anyone would have seen these kind of statistics 5 years later.
And yet your book, some of the listeners know you were here for a full book interview with Leonard just the other day, but with respect to this, your book is actually very optimistic, particularly regarding Islamic extremism, because you write, quote, Islamist extremism is no longer the most important, interesting, or dynamic force in the Middle East. Really?
I think that's true. I think the 7 years after 9/11, the vast majority of people in the region are disillusioned with the extremists, because they can destruct and they can destroy, but they can't construct positive alternatives that deal with the realities of their everyday lives, whether it's health care or education or job opportunities or clean access to clean water and electricity, that there are increasing numbers looking for those who will address those problems. And that's why I think the one success we've had in Iraq 5 years later is ironically not something we produced, but something that the tribal leaders in volatile Anbar province, the most dangerous part of the country for most of the 5 years, action they took themselves in turning against Al-Qaeda, because in the case of one leading sheikh, his father and two brothers had been murdered by Al-Qaeda, and he mobilized first his peers to form the First Awakening Council, and then tens of thousands of Iraqi men to form police and army units to force Al-Qaeda back out of Anbar. And that's a microcosm of what's happening in lots of different ways by lots of different kinds of people across the region, looking for ways to take their future into their own hands.
If that's true in Iraq, it would indicate that this war could end well, as President Bush predicted in his anniversary remarks about an hour ago, that toppling Saddam and even unleashing all this horribleness, if they're really going in the direction that you described, this could end well and be transformative for the region.
Well, I'm not sure that it's going to be end well if it does end well because of what we did. I think history will look back on the invasion of Iraq as the greatest foreign policy mistake or blunder, in whether it's tactics or even the simple goal of ousting Saddam Hussein, that the United States ever engaged in. But I do think that a lot of the people in the region are now trying to reshape their future. It is only a beginning. I'm not a dreamer or naive. I've covered the region for 35 years. I'm normally a pessimist and usually right as a result of it. But it is clear that people are angry about extremism in the same way they're angry at the United States. They think neither one has provided them with a viable alternative.
Peter in Riverdale, you're on WNYC. Hello, Peter.
Hi. Enjoy your show as always.
Thank you.
I just wonder about the McCain comment. I can't believe he didn't know that, but it's like his cognitive functioning just disappeared and something was coming out of like a canned speech somewhere inside his head. And I don't know whether he's tired. I don't know whether it's...
Well, you're raising an age issue. I noticed in the paper today, Robin, we just have 30 seconds left, that the Prime Minister of Israel, who welcomed McCain afterwards, praised him for his stamina, which is a backhanded reference to his age. Could this have been that kind of a mental glitch, or from what you could tell from that little clip, does it mean he really doesn't understand the relationship between Shiites and Sunnis?
I have no idea. I'm not with him. I do know that I've traveled with presidents, secretaries of state, and others, and they are exhausting trips, but I don't know whether that's any kind of excuse for that kind of basic, very basic gaffe.
All right. Robin Wright, her new book, Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Tomorrow, by the way, we'll have the former Israeli defense minister, Shlomo Ben-Ami, still involved in trying to make peace in the region. Some of you may be interested in my Wednesday night television show tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV, Channel 75 on the New York City cable systems. We'll show video of Tibet as the people rise up and the Chinese government cracks down. And we'll see you back here tomorrow morning, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.